Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Smiley Kaufman for 61.
Wow. I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show. What's up, y'all? The FedEx Cup playoffs are in full swing, and I'm joined this week by a guy who is in the hunt, JT Poston. The Postman has quite the journey in golf. He began the 2016 season with no status on any tour, but after a Monday qualifier at the Web.com Tour and a series of great finishes that year, earned his card for the 2017 PGA Tour season. He's won twice since then and enters the BMW Championship 43rd in the FedEx Cup standings and qualified for all the signature events in the 2024 PGA Tour season. We cover that and much more in this conversation. So let's get to it. Here's JT Poston.
All right, JT Poston, good friend of mine. We've been to plenty of dinners in our day and played plenty of golf as well. And you're sitting now in a hotel room in Chicago, Illinois, getting ready for the BMW Championship, coming off a plan. Just seems like a million weeks in a row. Like, are you just tired of golf at this point?
Dude, tired of golf is a stretch, maybe. I mean, I'm definitely a golf sicko when it comes to playing, but my body has never felt this tired, I would say, just from week after week and playing good. So playing a lot, playing late, playing in some heat, it takes a toll, but we're resting up this week and getting ready for BMW.
Yeah. We're going to get into those last 7 weeks of the really high quality golf that you have played, but I kind of want to start to your roots and where this all began. You know, I don't think I recall you as a junior golfer. I would probably describe you more as a late bloomer. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely was. I was a late bloomer.
And so you end up at Western Carolina. Was that, how many offers did you have, and how did you end up at Western Carolina?
Being in North Carolina, I grew up a Tar Heel fan, so I wanted to go to UNC. That was my dream school. That was where I wanted to go. And I went on a visit there, and basically the coach told me I wasn't good enough to be on his roster at the time. And so it kind of felt like, I mean, I get it now. It kind of, at the time, it felt like a little bit of a slap in the face, but
yeah,
I had offers from ECU and I had offers from Western Carolina, and I liked both coaches. I liked both schools. If I'd have gone to ECU, I'd have been teammates with Harold Varner for a year, which would have been fun, but I think Western was just a better fit. The coach, I knew I would play right away, and that was something that my coach, my swing coach at the time, was pretty big on, was just saying, go somewhere you can play. And honestly, I went into it thinking I'd go for a couple of years and maybe try and transfer to UNC, but I ended up loving it, and I ended up being a good fit.
Well, in this day and age of the transfer portal, that would have been way easier.
Back then it would have been a lot harder, and maybe that could have played a part keeping me there. But no, Western was a great spot in the mountains. I grew up in the mountains, so it felt like home a little bit, and I loved it.
All right, so how do you pronounce the name of the town in Western Carolina? Is it Kulawi? Kulawi?
Kulawi.
Kulawi. Kulawi.
Yeah.
What do people do for fun in Kulawi?
Oh man, you kind of got to make your own fun a little bit. at least we did when we were in school. So when we were in school, it was a dry county the first two years I was there. But I mean, there's a lot of good fly fishing, outdoor activities. I mean, you're right in the middle of the mountains. You're pretty close to some awesome rivers and streams to go float down, fish. do whatever you want, but it's a lot of it involves getting outdoors and kind of some good weather, I guess.
I mean, that's being a dry county.
It's a little different than SEC.
Where do you get your beer? Did you have to drive to a different county to do that?
We would drive to Silva, which is maybe a 10-minute drive, and you could buy some beer in the grocery store there or something.
Seems like that would be a place that you would buy the beer though, but it would not be cold. It would just be warm beer that you'd grab and then you'd have to go put it in the fridge. Is that true or no?
No, you could. I mean, it's a grocery store. You can grab the cold section. But I mean, hey, in college, you didn't really care. You're just trying to get your hands on it, right? Or a football game or something.
Oh gosh, that's amazing. So you kind of mentioned that it was in the mountains. And what was the golf course that y'all played at Western?
So campus was kind of situated right in the middle of like Asheville and Cashers Highlands. And obviously in the golf world, wow. Cashers Highland is
dude, y'all were an amazing
pretty,
spot.
Pretty well known. We were in a good spot. We didn't have like the facility on campus or anything. We would hit wedges, and when we practiced, we'd hit wedges on like the practice soccer field. And that was our practice facility, basically.
How boring did that get?
It was pretty bad. They got mad at us, I think, a couple of times because eventually we were tearing it up. But we were always 30 minutes from a lot of really good golf courses. And we were fortunate enough to have some alumni and some donors that were members at some awesome clubs up in Cashers and Highlands. And
amazing.
They had us up there. I mean, we played Mountaintop a couple times a year. We had our home tournament, which is now the JT Poston Invitational, but nice. We had it at Sapphire Valley, Country Club Sapphire Valley, which is a great spot. We had probably 5 or 6 courses that we just kind of bounced around and played a good bit, which made it fun for all the qualifying.
How cool is that you get to have your name on a tournament? You know, so many of the guys that are on the PGA Tour go to big schools. You got to be a pretty damn big deal to get your name on a tournament. If you're playing at Georgia, you're playing at Texas, like you got to pretty much be like Tiger Woods. But I mean, that is the benefit of going to Western Carolina. You will probably be the best player to ever play there, and you will get to have your name on a tournament. That's pretty sick.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the goal is to kind of give those guys the best chance at success as we can give them. And, you know, we're working on trying to get them a practice facility, and we got the tournament. Unfortunately, you know, in the fall, in the past, it's always been a little hard for me to get up there and be there for the tournament every year. But this year I plan on being there, and it'd be fun to see some of the guys and just go play host, I guess, for a couple of days up there.
That'll be fun. And my co-host and producer, Charlie Hume, is from the Durham, North Carolina area as we speak. And he knows that North Carolina mountain golf area pretty well. Mm-hmm. And he put a list down for me. And I kind of want you to rank your favorite North Carolina mountain golf courses. He just played Diamond Creek last weekend, so he wanted me to give you a shout out there. I know that's going to be number one. Yeah. So here are some of the courses he mentioned. And you can give me whether your top 3 or 4 or 5. But said Wade Hampton, Diamond Creek, Grandfather, Linville, Headwaters, which is, I guess, a par 3 across the street from Wade, High Hampton, Mountaintop, Biltmore Forest, Roaring Gap, and Sequoia National. That's kind of the list he gave me. I don't know if he left anything out. I'm not a mountain golf North Carolina hardo. So you're gonna have to tell me what your favorite golf courses are in that area.
So he hit some pretty good ones. I would say Diamond Creek is definitely number one. I think that might be my favorite golf course in the world. I love getting up there. It's just a fun experience.
You've told me that forever. You've been trying to get me to come up there.
It's a little bit hard to get to, but once you get up there, it's worth it for sure.
Why is it so good?
It's just the experience. I mean, once you're inside the gate, you don't leave. I mean, every part of it is fun. The golf course is fun. The service, they treat you like, they treat you so well. The food, I mean, you can go once you're there, you can play 18, you can play 36, you can play however much you want. And it's pure. The greens are some of the fastest greens I've ever played. Pure bent grass. It's on the side of the mountain, so like it's not a ton of like up and down, like big elevation changes. It's more kind of sitting on the side of the mountain, and you just you can see a lot of the golf course from most of the higher points on the property. So it's awesome, man. It's truly one of my favorites. Yeah. But that's number one. I'm going to put probably grandfather number two. I'm a little bit biased there. My grandfather, who got me started playing the game, used to be a member there. So I grew up, we went up there sometimes in the summer.
Is that near Boone?
Yeah. Yeah. So Diamond Creek, grandfather, Linville, those are all in Boone, right? Banner Elk, northwestern part of the state. And then you've got Cashers Highlands, which is southwestern part of the state, and that's Wade Hampton Mountaintop Headwaters, which I actually have never played Headwaters, but I've heard it's unbelievable. I heard the practice facility honestly is
really
one of the best parts. Yeah.
So what's the best one in that Cashers Highlands area to you?
Wade Hampton for sure.
Wade Hampton. Okay. Yeah. Is that the consensus answer for most people?
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody would say Wade is probably the top one, but and then maybe Mountaintop, but they're just very different experiences. Like Mountaintop used to be a Discovery property. Like you got music playing on the range, the comfort stations. It's very laid back. Yeah. I think depending on who I'm talking to, I might send in the Mountaintop before Wade Hampton, but just golf course and club, Wade Hampton's definitely hard to beat.
Is there any that were left out on this list? Is there ones that just kind of that stick out to you?
I mean, Old Edwards is great. There's so many good ones. Highlands Country Club is really awesome. Old Donald Ross, from the tips, is 6,300 yards, and it's still hard.
That's
fun. It's like hitting it down a hallway. I play Mimosa Hills, kind of a little down the mountain in Morganton. I grew up playing there in some high school stuff and junior stuff.
Yeah.
And it's an old Donald Ross that I'm sure some guys have played back in the day. But yeah, those are the only two that come to mind at this point. But man, it's hard to beat mountain golf. I love it.
Yeah. And I was actually going to ask you about playing mountain golf in general. For the most part, you could play some really good tracks, like some of the ones we've mentioned, but when you play kind of mid-tier mountain golf courses, they tend to be a little quirky. And like you kind of mentioned, you have to hit it down a hallway, just weird kind of shaped holes. Did you think that helped you at all, like playing tricky golf courses before you kind of got, or before you turned pro? Did that playing weird golf courses kind of change your perspective of how to get around a place?
I do. I think it kind of opened up the sort of creative and seeing shots. I mean, that's kind of how I approach the game, is just hitting different shots. I'm not really a see how I can optimize, bombing it as far as I can and then hitting it up there on the green. Like I'm much more feel based and kind of seeing a shot and hitting a shot. And I feel like that sort of comes from the golf courses that I grew up playing, mountain golf, a lot of elevation change, dog legs, trees that you're kind of working it around and just stuff like that. And then you got a lot of slope and a lot of those greens. So kind of being creative around the greens as well.
Well, we know you have a great putter and a great short game, but that's really interesting. The feel aspect in playing different shots. I'm much more of a bombing gouger at the current moment, but I definitely need to implement a little bit more of that feel in my golf game.
Yeah, it's a balance. I mean, I could definitely use a little more distance in my game too. It never hurts, but yeah, that's just how I grew up playing.
I would say that kind of you and I were both late bloomers. You had a much more successful college career than I did, but we kind of had the similar start, I would say, to our professional career. And the fact that, first off, I couldn't find the answer to this, but what did you miss out at Q school your first go, or did you have conditional status? What did you have?
I missed at first stage.
Missed it first.
So I turned pro fall of 2015, right after I graduated. Yeah. And did Q school, got through pre-Q.
Pre-Q.
And then missed.
Pre-Q.
Pre-Q. Yes,
that's right from the start.
Got through pre-Q right out of the gate. And then first stage, I missed by a shot. And So I was kind of looking at 16. I was going to do, thinking Canada, you know, try and get up to Canada. I did Q school there and played okay at Canadian Q school. And I don't even think I got full status there. I think I had like pretty decent conditional. And just while waiting for Canada to start up, I did that Monday on the web tour in April at Victoria National and got through and got rolling. And next thing I know, I was playing on tour in September.
How about you and I having Victoria National be our place where it got us going? You know, I know. Mine happened actually a couple weeks before that. I finished fourth in Louisiana and then fourth in Leon, Mexico. Did you ever play that event down there?
No. So no. I never played any of the South America ones, which a lot of guys give me grief for because I missed out.
You didn't experience the Wendt.com tour then. If you didn't play in Panama, you didn't play in Bogota, you didn't play in Leon, Mexico.
Yeah. I didn't play any of them.
I played Sao Paulo, Brazil. Gosh, man, that is just the nope.
I've heard a lot of good stories from those trips. So, I mean, I definitely feel like I missed out on some of those wild weeks.
Well, I wanted to mention this as well. Kind of this is right around that same time. So, you know, I kind of played my way off the tour, ended up doing some of this stuff. But around, I don't know what year this would have been, but I figured out that you started dating the sister of one of my best friend's brothers. So your eventual brother-in-law, by the way, congratulations, got married not too long ago. But I played basketball with your brother-in-law, and his younger brother was my best friend. And he has the Mims family, as you know, have five brothers and a sister, and it's a very big family. And they used to cheer me on. You know, they would come out to tournaments, watch me play. They would also be kind of the people on social media that, like, the thing about the Mims family, they have each other's backs, and they're going to go to war for you. And they used to do that for me on whether it be social media or at a golf tournament. And now the baton has been passed to JT Poston, and you are their number one golfer. And they love you. They cheer for you week in, week out. And so I had to get your take on what it's like having the Mims family backing you up.
Oh, it's great. It's funny you say that. You know, I mean, obviously Will Mims, I've gotten to know Will Mims quite a bit over the last few years. And we've gotten real close, and, you know, I have the support of his brothers and his family too, but I still have not met many of them in person.
They got your back, man.
On social media, they're backing me up on, you know, texts here and there. But I still haven't officially met him. We joke about getting together and doing like this golf trip and grill out and
come to Birmingham, man. I need to get to
Birmingham, but we've been talking about this trip for probably over, 2 years now, and we just haven't been able to do it. But no, they're great. They're great family, big family, like you said, and they got my back, which is great.
Yeah, you probably don't know the side of Will that. He was a year older than me, and he was a starting point guard, and I backed him up, but he's the nicest person in the world off the court. But back in the day on the court, man, he was the toughest dude out there, and that's why what made him so good. So if you ever need a guy, if you need to go to war, your brother-in-law, you probably don't know that, but he's got your back.
I've seen the competitive edge come out of Will a few times, which I love because I feel the same way when I'm competing. So
yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's nice to know I got that in my corner. We'll try and get it out of him again sometime soon, maybe.
Oh goodness, well. That was kind of in between that. So you go and win a championship, you win a John Deere. And I think it's really cool that you won in Wyndham, because I looked up, you grew up in Hickory, North Carolina. I was like, oh, wow, Greensboro is not that far away. And it's so close to Charlotte as well. Which one of those two events between Wells Fargo and Greensboro being the Wyndham championship did you want to win the most? Like, which one do you consider to be your hometown event that you want to win?
Oh man. I mean, honestly, growing up in Hickory, it used to be the Wachovia, in Charlotte. And that was always the one that we grew up, you know, watching and going and playing. Mm-hmm. And then you'd catch Greensboro later in the year, but just the timing of where it fell on the schedule, it was always like right when school was getting out and stuff. And Wells Fargo was always high on the list. So I would say if you'd asked me when I first turned pro, you know, Wells Fargo would have been probably my answer. I think now I'm a little bit biased because I've done it at Wyndham and gotten to experience it in Greensboro. And like you said, not far from home. So I had a ton of family and friends, college teammates, high school buddies. I mean, you name it. People I didn't know that went to Western because they're in North Carolina and so live cool. kind of close enough. So that was the beauty of it, is it's such a central location where like so many people from North Carolina came out to support a North Carolina kid trying to win. And it was a pretty cool feeling, like coming down the stretch, some pretty big crowds and everybody pulling for me, which was, it was a lot of fun.
How difficult was that? I mean, you were winning wire to wire that entire week and did make a bogey. Just, I mean, is that as good as golf you've ever played?
Yeah, I think it's the best I've ever hit it for sure. I mean, I remember Saturday, even like 11, one of the harder holes, Fleener and I are in between a 6 and a 7 iron going into this green. And we decided on hitting this like
chippy six,
soft, chippy, high cut six.
Yeah, that's when you know you got it. You can like work those middle irons. That's impressive.
Above my feet lie, and I clanked it off the pin to like 8 feet. And that was just kind of, I remember looking at him like, this is nuts. I don't even know how I'm doing this, but it's just like the ball is just going exactly where I wanted to go.
I mean, that's amazing. And I kind of look at what you did that week and kind of relate it to what we've seen the last month or so with Lucas Glover and kind of what he's done with his golf. And you're not too far behind him. Some of the golf you've played, you've only shot in the 70s twice. So, I mean, you're kind of just slightly under the radar from what we've seen with Lucas Glover. But how can you relate to what we've seen with Lucas and just that level of play? And when it's going good, it just feels like every single day when you show up, you just expect great things to happen. Why, how and why in the game of golf can we not stay in that mental frame more? But what do you think about Lucas in this run he's kind of been on?
Man, he's been on an impressive run. It's awesome to see. I mean, anybody that knows Lucas knows he's always been able to hit the ball really, really good. And the putter is what's held him back. And I think he's found something with this new putter that it's obviously given him some confidence. And when you have confidence in the putter, it frees up the rest of your game. And not that he needed it, but it's just like, that's a dangerous combo when it comes to Lucas Glover. But, you know, that like frame of mind, I think it's that, you know, people talk about you're never that far off sort of, you know, when you're struggling, you're never that far off from going on a tear. And, you know, a few months ago, I felt like I was playing just like I am now, hitting it as good as I am now, but I just couldn't get any rounds together. And next thing you know, it clicks, you know, at John Deere and you're off and running. It just takes a little bit of confidence. So I wish there was like a magic answer or like something that you could do to kind of flip the switch, but it just comes in waves and you try and ride those waves as best you can, I guess.
So I actually did get a chance to listen to your John Deere press conference this year. And because it was right before you started to go on this crazy good run. And my takeaways were, well, first off, I think it's great for everyone to have press conferences. And I wish I would have played good enough to have them more often, because I think I would have convinced myself that I was about to play some really good golf. And Phil Mickelson was the best at doing that. Even when he was like just off, he's like, I'm really close. I'm about to play good golf. And that's kind of what you said at that press conference. And then you go on this crazy great run.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know how to explain it other than, you know, the tournaments leading up to that week. You know, I think somebody asked, you know, here are your results. You haven't played your best. That was kind of the case last year too. And you flip the switch, like, do you feel like you can do the same this year? And I just remember telling them, you know, hey, I feel like my game is in a better place than it was last year at this point. And my confidence level is in a much better place, but I just hadn't put the results together. And it just so happened to kind of click Thursday at the Deer on that back nine. Really, I didn't even get off to that good a start. I think I was a couple over on Thursday on the first nine holes and just kind of thinking, man, this is maybe here we go again. But putter got hot on the back nine, turned it into a decent score and just was off and running.
To your point, talking about your form, you said you're 85th or so in the FedEx Cup. you know, is that something that's on your mind as you move forward? And you said, well, you know, I'm going to be adding the 3M to my schedule and I feel like I'm close. And then the 3M, we saw you almost get the job done. Can you, first off, talk to me about the 18th hole. We saw what social media said. I was behind you every step of the way, just so you know.
Yeah, well, the thing about the 3M and 18 was people were saying I should have just hit it out the side, got a 3-shot lead on second and played for second. And my whole thing was I was trying to win, and walking up to the ball before we'd even see where the ball had ended up, I told Flynn, I was like, if this thing is in a decent spot, we got to give it a go. And he was on board. He's like 100%. And he's like, if it's not, then we get it down there and you try and use the backstop and make it from the fairway. But we both felt like if we can get it somewhere up there by the green, I got a better chance at making three. And Lee had hit it left and mm-hmm. knew he was going to have to lay up. So it was like, maybe we can hit something up there and make that wedge shot a little harder on him.
What was the lie like? Percentage wise? Did you think you could pull it off?
I definitely thought we could pull it off. It really wasn't that far from being in a decent spot, I think. Mm-hmm. The lie was not as much below my feet as it was just a downhill lie. And so our biggest concern was not just getting a height on it. And that's exactly what happens. I absolutely smoked it. It had plenty of distance. It just came out really low. And it was like, it looked like it was really close. Like it was either going to hit into the bank and pop up or go over the green, or it was just going to barely fly, or it was just going to barely fly into the rocks, and it just hit the rocks. And then we couldn't see it after that.
Well, you talked about that. It had some heat. It hit that rock. I think that ball is still in the air.
Yeah. Well, we couldn't see it. And all we could do was listen to the crowd reaction. And you just hear like, Oh, and we're like, is that on the green? Is that in the water? Where is that thing? Like we had no idea.
It ricocheted so far up in the air back to the right. I mean, you could have gotten a crazy good break there. It's a bummer that ended up in the water, but still, yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I think that was the right play. If you felt like you could pull the shot off, absolutely. That 18th hole is difficult, man.
It is. And like the people that are, you know, you should have finished solo second. Like I still could have finished second. Where I really messed up was we misjudged the wedge and then didn't get up and down from the front fringe for double. Like that was where I messed up second place. Like,
yeah,
it was never about the going for it. Like we never questioned going for the green. And it was just, I thought it was interesting that was what everybody was focused on, was that I shouldn't have tried to hit that shot. And I was like, where I messed up the whole second place thing, solo second, was, you know, the 3-putt from 30 feet in the fringe.
I'm sure that you don't lose sleep over the going for the green. You lose sleep over just the little silly mistake. But still, I mean, T-second PGA Tour event, you're not going to be complaining too much, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. Like you said, I was playing good. I feel like I had some confidence in my game. I was like, I'm just going to keep rolling.
Well, you did and made it to the playoffs going to Memphis. And What was it like last week in Memphis? You know, there was only 70 guys. Getting into the top 50 was so important to get into those signature events. What was your stress level like last week, especially in just maybe the hottest place in the world?
It was very hot. I think that Friday was, I think you could ask anybody in the field, and that was the hottest they've ever been on a golf course. I would be willing to bet. It definitely was for me. But yeah, it's, you know, it's a weird week because playoffs, you're excited about the playoffs, but you know, like if you don't make it to the top 50, like there's really not much difference finishing 51st versus 71st and not making it to the playoffs. Like there isn't much benefit, it feels like, whereas there's such a huge benefit to making it to top 50. And right. So, fortunate enough for me, I've been playing well and moved in. I was like 45th going into the week. And so definitely didn't have it locked up, but I was at least inside the number to start the week. And
what did you need to do?
I didn't want to. Like,
was there a number that you thought you needed?
I didn't want to kind of go down that path. I didn't want to be worrying too much about where I finished and watching leaderboards too much. And At the end of the day, I mean, I still want to make it to Atlanta. And so, and I feel like Memphis was a good golf course for me. You know, I felt like it suited my game well, and I'd played well there in the past. And so my focus was, you know, try and go out there and focus on Atlanta and try and get into that top 30 going into this week, and got off to a good start and just kind of didn't get it going on the weekend. Just didn't make enough birdies, but it was, I was glad to still squeak in, on the number and make that top 50.
All right. So I texted with your caddy, Aaron Fleener, who's hilarious. He's just ridiculous in a lot of things that he does. He's just the best. But I texted him and just like, hey man, give me some on JT. And he said, you need to ask him about, how that Gorilla Glue worked last week on the 13th hole.
on what hole? On,
he said it was on 13. He said, it worked. He said Gorilla Glue worked really well, but on 13, apparently y'all put too much Gorilla Glue on, to
so
try
we
to
have this. Yeah. So a little background, like I have a hard time when it's really hot, my hands get really sweaty, and like, everybody's like, well, just put a new glove on. Like, it's not my left hand, it's my right hand that feels like it's sliding off the club. And I, like, it was a problem on Friday and Saturday in Memphis when it was
really
hot.
How many gloves
were
you going through?
I mean, a handful, but again, like, it wasn't the left hand, it was my right hand.
Oh, it's your right hand. Okay.
And so I'm like, we're wiping down the grips. Like, I'm wiping down my hands, but as soon as I get to the top of my swing with a driver, it feels like my right hand's flying off and like the ball's going everywhere. And that's not a good recipe for success around there. And so I texted with Danny McCarthy, and he told me he uses these Gorilla Glue towels that have like a lot. It's like really tacky. And he said, he's like, look, I asked the rules officials, like they said, it's totally fine. Well, you can use it on the course. Like, here's what I do. And so I tried it out on Sunday, and it was night and day difference. Like, oh, you don't have to put much on there. And, but because it's so tacky, like I didn't want to, like I was telling, like Fleener was like, I'll do the, you know, the whatever, like patting it down with the wipe or whatever to give it some tackiness. And it was great. And then we got a 13 and he put it on there, and I like my hands felt glued to the club. Like we overdid it, and I hit
so you
this,
can't like you're quick. Not you're trying to regrip and you like can't regrip.
I can't get my hand off the grip. It feels like, and so I'm like, I just completely like hit this like awful duck hook, like toe hook on 13. I had like a 215 yards to the hole on a hole that we've been hitting like eight.
Isn't that out? Isn't there out of bounds left on 13?
There is. It was close. I mean, when I hit it, I looked at it and I was like, is that out of bounds? And he said, no, I saw it bounce. Like, I think it was such a quick hook, it didn't get to it. Like, it bounced and just kind of didn't quite get to the out of bounds.
Yeah, see, it's like 215. I remember hitting like wedge, maybe nine against the front middle pins on that hole.
Yeah, the pin was like front middle. And, you know, I hit a good drive and it's probably a 8 or 9 iron. And we were ripping 4 iron in. But yeah, it is something I do. I will like, it's not, it's awesome. We put a little too much. We got a little too sticky there for a hole or two and then got it figured out after that.
All right. He also told me to ask you, how many times did you accidentally not put your golf shoes on before showing up for work in this 7 week stretch?
Oh yeah. I've done it probably like 4 or 5 times.
Okay. He said it was three.
I think he's been there for three of them, but I think I've done it two other times when he didn't see it. But like, go to the locker room, you know, getting golf balls, glove, you know, at the open, it was like raining. And so grabbing rain gear, all this stuff. And I get halfway, a couple times I got like halfway to the range and I'm like in my tennis shoes. I'm like, I didn't put my golf shoes on. I got to turn around. Just like, I mean, man, just 7 weeks on the road, a little mentally fried, I guess. But if that's the worst of it, then I'll be okay.
Oh, God, man, he's the best. All right, so kind of going into BMW this week. This is kind of more of a just general topical question about the PGA Tour schedule and the system as it stands now. And so you're obviously in that top 50 category, so you can probably speak a little bit more freely on this, but you know, how do you feel about the shrinking of the PGA Tour to kind of feed less mouths more in years past?
Yeah, I still feel like I'm kind of on the fence, which is probably a weird thing to say, being one of the guys that's going to benefit from it, I think. But I'm kind of waiting to see if it all pans out how they say it's going to, with like the field sizes. And, you know, the argument was always the reason why it's 70 and no cut versus doing, you know, 100 or 120 was, mm-hmm. they felt like if all the top players played and then you fill the field after that, then guys are going to have to take weeks off somewhere. And so it's going to hurt the tournaments that are, you know, right before, or yeah. right after, I mm-hmm. guess, where guys will take weeks off. Whereas if you made it 70 man fields, then guys are either in or you're not. And if you're not in, you're going to play those other events and you're going to still get some big names. And then obviously as you get further down the season, guys are going to have to play or going to add events, to try and improve their number and make it the playoffs again. So I don't know.
Do you think those events that are the normal Open Tour events, do you expect those fields to be stronger than we saw this year?
That's where I don't necessarily think so, because if all the top players are playing all the same events and there's a good number of them, I don't see them adding other events other than maybe one or two favorites that they might have. But I don't know. I mean, when I think about my schedule for next year, I definitely still have some that I know I've played well in that are not going to be designated events, not going to be signature events. I know, you know, I can think of a handful that I know I'll play regardless. And so maybe other guys will be looking at it that way too, but I also feel like I play more than most guys. So, I'm definitely interested to see how it plays out. It feels like there's a lot of changes going on. And so everybody's kind of just waiting to, you know, see how it works out.
Well, if you figure anything out, you let us know, because we try to break it down every Monday. And some weeks we're like, you know what, I think we got a feel for this. And then other weeks I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm getting a headache. I've read it so many times trying to figure out what's going on. It's just, it's crazy. If you'd have told me 3 or 4 years ago that there would be like an actual change to the PGA Tour, I would tell you you were crazy. But now it's just, I think it's changing for the better. I'm not sure if that's the sentiment of the players, but I like how competitive these playoffs are.
Yeah. And I think when you look back at this year and you look at the designated events this year, they all produce awesome weeks, you know, Waste Management, Wells Fargo, Travelers, Hilton Head, they all had exciting finishes, big names, and like create a lot of drama, but it was also still full field events. And so I think that's where I feel like I'm torn, is like it seemed like it worked pretty well, and I don't know how much better is it going to be cutting it down to 70 guys and no cut. So I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Oh, we definitely will see. And it's kind of an ever changing deal. It's a Ferris wheel of new things every week that we're having to break down. So it's a bit of a mess.
Exactly.
This is the last question from the Fleener mailbag. And and he said, are you planning on working out this fall so we can cover fairway bunkers that are 227 yard carry at the Scottish Open?
Yeah. I will definitely be hitting the gym a little bit. In my defense, we had about a 90 mile an hour wind in our face on Sunday when I remember looking at him, and it was the 18th hole. So we knew about how far the ball was going, and it was blowing and it's straight in. And I'm like, how far is that bunker? And he said 228. And I'm like, surely I can cover that. Like, I think in the back of my mind, I was like, I need to hit this thing good, but the ball is not going anywhere. It's cold. It's windy. And I absolutely smoked this thing right at it. And I'm like, all right, that's got to be over it. You know, I hit as good as I can hit it, right in the middle of it. Dead. Absolutely dead.
How hard is that 18th hole back in the breeze? Is that the hardest hole ever played on tour?
Well, normally if it's into the, I mean, earlier in the week, if it was into you know, you can still cover the bunkers, but you can also just hit something short and then just hit like a 2 or 3 iron into the green. Like, it's not a birdie hole. You're just trying to figure out how to make 4 and get out of there. But I can't hit 3 wood when it's blown 40 into, because you're then not I'm not able to get to the green.
You're 100% not getting there.
Yeah. And so, I mean, if I hit the fairway, it was going to be driver 3 wood for sure.
Oh gosh.
But it ended up being driver and then blast out and then 4 or 5 iron in for a third, something like that. Not
well. I mean, you had a great week, and Aaron Fleener also wants to know if we're ever going to do 7 weeks in a row, because he would prefer that you would not ever play 7 weeks in a row again.
I'm on board with that. I know he didn't beat us to many tee boxes or greens or balls in the fairways last week.
He's a big guy.
He's a big guy. I get it. He's carrying that heavy ass bag. I definitely am not jealous, but I don't plan on it. But if we do, hopefully we're on a run like this, and then maybe that makes it a little sweeter for him.
Has he talked you into wearing some of this Saks underwear? I know he's now a model with 3 other caddies on the PGA Tour for this underwear thing. I mean, what are your overall thoughts of your caddy being an underwear model?
He's getting these days, ever since that came out, he's getting more shout outs from the crowds, like wherever we go, than I am. Like, we're going to, like, we love you, Fleener. We love you, you know, which is great. Like, I love it. It's great. I want to fly as much under the radar as I can and just do my own thing. And, I guess what week did they launch it at the US Open?
That's when the campaign came out, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe before that, I know they had a house at the US Open.
Yeah. So the US Open, they had a bunch of, I think they did like a shoot with Saks, and they gave him a bunch of underwear, I guess, and done a bunch of different sizes. So he was like, what's your size? I'll bring you some. And I gave him they were so small. I mean, I looked like I was wearing like kids underwear. It was terrible. So I need to get the right size to give a full review, but it's, in the back of my mind, I don't know that I can do it, knowing that he's promoting it, and he's going to be all over the internet wearing his underwear. So let him handle that, and I'll kind of stay out of the way.
I mean, we can't top this conversation with anything other than talking about men's underwear. So I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to let you and Aaron go and get some work done this afternoon at the BMW Championship. We're going to be rooting you on over there, try to get over there to East Lake and watch you hopefully make a run at this FedEx Cup.
Awesome. Yeah, I appreciate it. That's the plan. Hope to catch you out there in Atlanta.
Absolutely, my man. Well, thank you for coming on. Appreciate your time. And like the Mims family does, I will continue to have your back and cheering you on, dude. You keep doing your thing.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Thanks,
guys. All right, brother. Later. Great of JT to take the time and pulling for a big week for the postman that gets him to the Tour Championship at East Lake. That's all for today's episode. We'll be back here on Monday breaking down the second FedEx Cup playoff event and previewing the season finale. Thanks for listening, and see you then. The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.